Oh, sure. Beyond psychology. Responses to disciples' questions. Given in Punta del Este, Uruguay. Discourse number 43.
Beloved Bhagwan, you told a story about 10 years ago that I have not been able to understand. A seeker is lost in the mountains. He is tired and thirsty. It is night, and he sees a silver bowl with crystal clear water, which he drinks and then sleeps. In the morning light, he sees that the bowl was in fact a dirty old skull. He laughed and became enlightened. What did he see, Bhagwan?
The story is simple. But with immense meaning. The seeker saw in the skull the whole reality. And our illusions about it. He saw what we think is and what really it is. And the difference is tremendous. He would not have taken that water, drunk that water, if he had known that it is a dirty old skull. He thought it was a beautiful bowl with crystal clear water. Our life is lived in illusions of crystal clear water. But reality is totally different. Seeing the difference, he laughed at himself. And to be able to laugh at oneself can become a breakthrough. One can become enlightened. People laugh at others. And people feel hurt if somebody laughs at them. But to come to an understanding where you see your own stupidity, and your whole life is full of it, We live in dreams, illusions, hallucinations. They do not correspond to reality at all. The reality is the dirty old skull. He laughed at himself, and in this very laughter he became a different man. Now he will live with reality, whatever it is. Now no illusions will be needed, no hallucinations will be needed to cover it, to hide it. He has seen the point. The story is simple, but it is the story of the whole pilgrimage from darkness to light, from illusions to reality. Just watch your mind. How it creates illusions about everything and then gets disillusioned and disturbed. You love a man, you love a woman, you create a certain illusion about the man or the woman. It is not the truth. Deep down you know it too. You are imposing an image. Soon it will be shattered, because against reality no illusion can last long. Soon you will find a dirty old skull. Then ordinarily you will be disappointed, miserable, and you will miss the point. If you could have laughed you would not have missed it. Even when you understand that things are not the way you had imagined them to be, you dump the whole responsibility on the other person. a woman who was beautiful, turns out to be a bitch. A man you had thought to be a hero turns out to be just a hand-pegged husband. You are not going to laugh at yourself. You will throw the whole responsibility on the other person, that he deceived you. He pretended something that he was not. That she was not so beautiful as she was pretending. With all the makeup, she deceived him. But no makeup is needed. Your illusions, your hallucinations, your lust is enough. The greatest makeup in the world. So whatever you want, whatever you desire, you project. And when that projection proves wrong, there are two possibilities. Either dump the whole responsibility on the other person, who is simply innocent of what you were seeing in her. In fact, when you talk to a woman that you are beautiful, this and that, she wonders, because she also looks in the mirror. She does not find anything that you are talking about. But why disturb you unnecessarily? Why not enjoy? It fulfills her ego. Even the ugliest woman will not object that you are wrong. She will smile and accept all your compliments. And standing before a mirror, she may think, perhaps he is wrong. How that man can be wrong? Why he should be wrong? In each love affair, both the persons are innocent. As far as they are concerned, but both are responsible for projecting upon the other something which the other is not. A Sufi story is that Mulla Nasruddin had a beautiful house in the hills, and once in a while he used to go there And sometimes he will say it will take 3 weeks for him to rest, or 2 weeks, or 4 weeks. But he never managed the date that he had given he will be coming back. He will always come sooner. He had gone for 3 weeks, and within 2 weeks he will be back. His friends started asking that you plan for 3 weeks, then you come in 2 weeks, sometimes even in 1 week. What is the matter? He said, you don't know. I have an old woman servant. They said, what that has to do with your remaining in the hills and relaxing? He said, first listen the whole thing. She is so ugly. That's why I have chosen her. She is my criterion. When she starts looking beautiful to me, then I escape. Then I know, nah, Mullah, this is not a safe place, and you have lost your mind. So I go for 3 weeks, but what can I do? In 3 days she starts looking beautiful. And if I stay 1 day more, I may propose. And she is really ugly. It is difficult to tolerate her. But I have kept her especially for this purpose, that when I start losing my mind, I will know exact time when to leave and come back home into the world. You project, the projection fails. If you could laugh at yourself, that is the message of this story. The man was thirsty in the night. It was a projection. Even in the full moon night, a skull is a skull. And the dirty water is dirty water. But he was thirsty. It was his thirst that projected clean, crystal clean water in a beautiful bowl. And he drank with joy. In the morning he was not thirsty, and it was sunlight, and he looked at the bowl. It was a dirty old skull, and he has drunk from it. If he had known that it is a skull filled with dirty water, he would have rather suffered thirst than to drink from it. But his thirst projected an illusion. We are doing it every moment of our life, projecting illusions about people, about things. And getting frustrated continuously, disgusted. The story is saying to you, those are the moments, if you can understand that it was your projection. And this is time to laugh at yourself, at your own stupidity, at your own foolishness. And that will be an act of tremendous intelligence. And it will be freeing you from that constant projection, frustration, that whole vicious circle. An old monk with his young disciple was passing through the forest, going to another town. But the young man was very much puzzled, because the old man had never walked like that. He was almost running and clutching his bag, and once in a while he will feel something inside the bag. The young man could not believe what he has got in the bag. And he was again and again asking, will we be able to reach the town before sunset? The young man said, even if we don't reach, we have nothing to fear. We can stay in the forest. We have stayed many times, so it is not new, but today you seem to be strange. The old man said, we will discuss about it later on. First, be fast. I don't want to stay in the forest tonight. Just by the side of the road was a well, and the sun was just setting. Before the sun sets, they washed themselves. They were really tired, drank, and while the old man was washing his face, he gave his bag to the young man and told him, be careful. The young man said, he has never been this way. And out of curiosity, he looked into the bag. In the bag, he was carrying 2 bricks of gold. Now, everything was clear. Why he cannot stay in the forest? Why for the first time he is so afraid? When he was washing his face and doing his evening prayer, the young man threw those two bricks into the forest, found two stones almost weighing equal to the bricks, put them in the bag, and the old man finished his prayer in half the time. He was in such a hurry, and he immediately took the bag from the young man. And the weight was showing that everything is okay. They rushed on. After a mile, it was getting dark. The old man said, "It seems to be difficult to reach to the town." And the place is dangerous. But the young man said, "Don't be afraid. As far as the danger is concerned, I have thrown it by the side of the well." He said, "What do you mean you have thrown the danger by the side of the well?" He said, "Look into your bag and you will know." He looked into the bag and he said, "My God." And the old man laughed, threw the bag, sat under a tree, could not stop laughing. The young man said, "What? Why you are laughing so much?" He said, "I am laughing that you have done the right thing." And for 1 mile almost, with those stones, I was still befooling myself, thinking it is gold. Now we can sleep under this tree, it is good. And there is no fear and there is no hurry. He could have been angry to the young man and missed the point. But he laughed. Madly laughed. Because he could see the point that it was so stupid of me. The young man has proved far more intelligent than me, my own disciple, has to teach me the lesson. And they slept the whole night. And in the morning, the old man touched the feet of the young man and thanked him. That although I am your master, but you helped me from an illusion. And I have slept so deeply the whole night. I have not slept for a few nights because of that bag and those golden bricks would not let me sleep. Even in the night, I was groping in the bag and trying to find out whether they are there or not. Those bricks had become so important that I lost my joy. I averaged my prayers, I averaged my meditation. And as far as existence is concerned, the gold or a rock are not different. It is human illusion. We have projected if man is no more in this world, gold will not be gold. Although it will be itself, but there will be no difference in valuation. The valuation and the difference is our projection. And then we suffer. So that insight in that small anecdote is great. If you can laugh at yourself when any of your illusion falls away, soon you will be able to live without illusions. To live without hallucinations, to live without projections. And to live without all these things means to live in peace and to live in silence. And to celebrate small things of life.
Beloved Book One, I remember once hearing you tell us that Buddha's definition of truth was that which works. It struck me as almost audacious and yet totally pragmatic. And for both reasons, I loved it. My understanding is that your definition of truth is probably the same, that you will do and say anything at all in the name of truth that might prod us in the right direction. I would love to hear you speak to us on this.
It is true. I can say anything if it directs you towards truth. Of course, truth cannot be said. It can only be pointed at. I can use anything that points towards it. Perhaps for different people, different pointers are needed. To me, it does not matter what I say. What matters is whether it leads you in the right direction towards your illumination. Yes, my definition is exactly the same. Truth is that which works. It is pragmatic. And Gautam Buddha was a very pragmatic man, very scientific. This definition can be called also scientific. All definitions of sciences are just nothing but proofs for this definition. We don't know what electricity is. We only know how it works. We don't know anything about atomic energy, what it is, but we know how it works. And that knowledge of how it works is the whole science about it. The ultimate truth is not different. And the master's function is to lead you, to direct you, to push you in a direction where you will find the truth. He cannot give it to you, but he can create devices which will lead you to it. In a very subtle way, what the master says is not meant to be understood. It is meant to be drunk. So that it reaches to your blood, to your bones, to your marrow, and you start moving into a certain direction, not knowing where you are going. But the master knows where you are going. If you are going on the right track, you will find his blessings and his love showering on you. That will be the only indication that you are on the right path. One day you will find the truth. And then you will laugh that what was said has nothing to do with it. But it certainly turned your attention towards it. I have always told the story A house is on fire, and small children in the house are there. And they are playing, and they are so much involved in their play that the whole neighborhood is shouting, "Come out! The house is on fire," but they are enjoying that too. The flames all around, and they are just in the middle of the house. They have never seen such fireworks. And they are not listening to the crowd. And then comes the father who had gone to the market. And people say, "Now, do something, your all children will be died. The house is almost going to collapse." The father went close and shouted that, "I have brought your toys. All the toys that you had asked, come out. Just the last door, back door of the house was still not burning. They rushed all out and asked the father, "Where are the toys?" And the father said, "You will have to forgive me. I have not brought them today, but tomorrow I will bring them, certainly." But they said, "Why you unnecessarily disturbed our game?" He said, "I have not disturbed your game. You do not understand. The house is on fire. You would have been dead. I simply lied to you about the toys, because I knew the only thing that can bring you out is your toy. Now, toys and fire seem to have no connection, but in that particular situation, the father functioned as a master. He gave them an indication that saved their lives. Although now they are aware that he lied, but they will not complain about it. He lied out of compassion. He lied because he loved them. He lied because he wanted to save their lives. Truth cannot be said, so whatever can be said is going to be a beautiful lie. Beautiful because it can lead towards truth. So I make a demarcation between lies, beautiful lies and ugly lies. Ugly lies which take you away from truth, and beautiful lies which take you close towards truth. But as far as their quality is concerned, they both are lies. But those beautiful lies work. Hence, in some way, they partake the flavor of truth.
question I have had since I was a kid and started seeing the ways of the world is, why do people treat each other like they do? Where is the love, the compassion, and the respect for each other? I think that everybody's longing to live in love and harmony with himself and all the human beings around. And I don't think there is any longing for hate, violence, and power over other people. But this is what I see happening. What is it that makes people live this unnatural and miserable life? Is it all conditioning? Or is there something in man that makes him willing to go astray?
It is both. First, there is something in man that leads him astray. And secondly, there are people whose interest is to lead human beings astray. Both together create a false, fake human being. His heart longs for love. But his conditioned mind prevents him from love. You will be surprised to know that Adolf Hitler never allowed his girlfriends to sleep in his room. For the simple reason that how can you trust? The woman may shoot you in the night. Mix poison in your water. What is the guarantee? She may be pretending just that she loves you. It may be just a conspiracy. There is no way to find whether it is conspiracy or a true love for him. To be on the safer side, he never allowed any woman with whom he has been in contact to sleep in his room. He never allowed anyone to be friendly with him. Goebbels or his other close associates, he always kept them at a distance. It is said there was not a single person who could put his hand on his shoulder like a friend. Too much closeness is dangerous. That was his conditioning. He may do harm to you. He may come to know something about you which he may use against you. It is better to keep him at a distance. And everybody is ambitious. Everybody wants to be in his place. So although they are looking very friendly, but deep down they are all enemies, competitors. They can kill him. He had no friend. And what kind of love is this, that he cannot trust the woman in his room? One of his women who remained many years in love with him, and there was no reason to suspect, but suspicion needs no reason. One day she wanted to go and see her mother, who was ill in the same town. And Adolf Hitler said no. Yes was very difficult for him to pronounce for anything. There is a deep psychological meaning in it. No gives you power. Yes does not give you power. Whenever you say no, you can feel power. Whenever you say yes, you can feel love, you can feel compassion, but not power. Words have their own qualities. Those qualities you cannot find in the dictionaries. But in actual life, you go in the psychology of the words. Each word has its unique individuality. No is not simply a denial. It is an assertion of power. There was no need to say no. She was going just to see her sick mother, and she will be back before he will be back from the office. But yes was not his word. He knew only to order. Not to accept anybody else's idea. Even such a small thing that has nothing to do with power. He went to the office, the woman thought that seeking menace, seeking go and see the mother and come back. He will not be back. She went, came back, and certainly she managed, but the first thing he inquired from the guard of the house, that has she been out, how long? And he loaded his gun and just went in and sought her. He did not even ask. He did not even give her an opportunity to say anything. That is enough. And it has to be a proof for everybody else that not to follow his order means death. He longed for love, but his mind longed for power. And you cannot ask for both. This is the problem. The child is born with a heart which longs for love, but he is also born with a brain which can be conditioned, and the society has to condition it against the heart, because the heart will be always rebellious against the society. It will always follow its own way. It cannot be made into a soldier. It can become a poet, it can become a singer, it can become a dancer, but it cannot become a soldier. It can suffer for its individuality. It can die for its individuality and freedom. But it cannot be enslaved. That is the state of the heart. But the mind, the child comes with an empty brain, just a mechanism which you can arrange the way you want. It will learn the language you teach. It will learn the religion you teach. It will learn the morality you teach. It is a simply computer machine. Now you just feed it with information. And every society takes care to make the mind stronger and stronger, so that if there is any conflict between heart and mind, the mind is going to win. But every victory of the mind over heart is a misery. It is a victory over your nature, over your being, over you by others. And they have cultivated your mind to serve their purposes. For example, in India, the British government ruled for 300 years, and it managed a certain kind of education that only produces clerks, postmasters, station masters. The whole program is such that it does not produce great intellectuals, geniuses, scientists, no. So a person goes studying 1/3 of his life and comes out of the factory of the university just a clerk. But the British government needed clerks. By the way, because the capital of India in the beginning of British Empire was Calcutta. Bengalis were the first to be indoctrinated by the British education system. They were the first to become mediators between the land and its people and the rulers. The rulers did not know the language of the people did not know the language of the rulers. These mediators knew both. They were respected by the masses because they were so close to the rulers. Only second to the rulers. But the rulers hated them. It was just a necessity to create an army of mediators, otherwise you cannot rule such a huge country. There will be no understanding, no communication. But they hated these people. And just for example, I will tell you, they called these Bengalis Babus. And the word Babu became respectful all over India. Because the rulers were calling the Bengalis, Babus, the word Babu became very important, so significant that even the first president of India was called Babu Rajendra Prasad. And nobody ever thought what this word means. I told Rajendra Prasad that you should drop this and you should make it known to the country that nobody uses this word, because this is condemnatory. It means a man with bad smell. Bengalis eat fish. Fish and rice, that is their only food. And they smell of fish. Just eating fish continuously. Bengal is a beautiful place, and you will find one beautiful thing, that in every house you will find a small lake attached. Richer people have big lakes with their palaces. And those lakes are simply to have fishes produced for their reproduction. Those lakes are not for any other purpose but to get fresh fish. And the kind of fish they like. Every house, even a poor man's house, has a small pond. It looks very beautiful because a small pond with palm trees. It may be a small hut, but the smell is too much. Only once I have traveled in Bengal, and then I said, I cannot go further than Calcutta. It stinks. Everybody is stinking of fish. Every house is stinking of fish. That is their main diet. Babu is a Persian word. Bu means smell, and Ba means with. The Britishers has got India from the Mohammedans. Whose language was Persian, Arabic, Urdu, and it is from them they got this idea of Babu. It was condemnation, but to the masses it became the most respectful word. India must be having more universities than any country. 100 universities and thousands of colleges. And the whole product is just to serve the empire. And the whole education is to be obedient, not to be rebellious. It is absolutely against any idea of revolution. India would have remained a slave country for centuries still. Just Britain committed one mistake. It allowed few rich people's sons and daughters to be educated in England, and that was the trouble. These were the people who brought the idea of freedom to India. No Indian educated in India had any idea of freedom. But few rich people sent their sons, their daughters to be educated in England. Because if they are educated in England, then they will be on the highest post in India. The same degree holder from Indian university will never reach that post. But from England, he comes qualified for the highest post. Britain created its own enemies unknowingly. These were the people who signed Britain a different kind of education, who learnt about democracy, who learnt about freedom, who learnt about individual rights, who learnt about freedom of expression. And they came back to their country full of utopian ideas how India can become independent. So all the fighters against British regime were basically educated by England, and I don't think they have even yet realized the fact, because nobody has noted it anywhere. One man who was very influential in India, Subhas Chandra. He was educated in Britain. And anybody who was educated in Britain was immediately absorbed in the highest government service, Indian Civil Service, ICS. Every student coming from England had to give an interview to the governor of his state. And Subhas has come full with the desire to fight British Empire, not to serve it. But still he went to give his interview. And Bengalis have a certain habit, they always carry their umbrella. Nobody knows why. I have asked many that it is not raining, it is not hot, but traditionally it is part of them. Without an umbrella, a Bengali is not a full Bengali. His umbrella is absolutely necessary. And they give reasons because they are intellectual people. They say that rains can come any time. It is unpredictable. One should be always prepared for anything. Right now it is cloudy. The sun can come out and it will be hot. And moreover, there are so many dogs and this and that, and you can use your umbrella. Even if you have to fight with someone, umbrella is handy. So Subhas bent with his umbrella, his head inside the governor's office, and the governor was very much annoyed that an Indian should behave in this way. He should remove his head to be respectful, and he has come to give an interview. So the governor said, first you remove your head. You don't know even how to be respectful. And Subhas took his umbrella out and on the other side of the table was the governor. He hooked his neck with his umbrella and said, if you want respect, then you should be respectful too. You should have stood. If you cannot stand, you should not expect any respect from me. And I am not interested in your ICS. I had just come to see how you behave with people. But don't think that you can misbehave with me. People like you used to polish my shoes in England. Naturally, in England, a white man will polish the shoes. So just because you are white, that does not mean anything. Keep your service to yourself. These were the people who created the whole freedom movement. The British government forgot completely that you have created a certain education system in India which is to produce only killer servants, slaves. Then you should not have allowed Indians to be educated in England, because these people will be dangerous to the empire. And they proved dangerous, and they destroyed the empire. But the whole credit goes to the British universities. So mind is empty. It is brain. You can put anything in it. And 25 years of education, you can make it so strong that you forget your heart. You will always remain miserable. The misery is that your heart can only give you joy, can only give you happiness, can only make you dance. The mind can do arithmetic, but it cannot sing a song. Just those are not the capacities of the mind. So you are torn apart between your nature, which is your heart, and the society that is in your head. And certainly you are born, everybody is born with these two centers. That is the difficulty. And one center is empty. In a better society, it will be used in accordance with the heart, to serve the heart, and then it will be a great life full of rejoicings. But up to now, we have lived in an ugly society with rotten ideas. And they have used the mind and that vulnerability is there. Mind can be used. Now communists are using it in one way, fascists used in Germany in one way, all the other religions are using it in different ways. But that vulnerability is with every individual, that you have a mind which you bring empty. In fact, it is a blessing of existence, misused, exploited. It is given you empty so that you can make it perfectly subservient to your heart, to your longings, to your potential. So nothing is wrong in it. But the wasted interest all over the world have found it a beautiful opportunity for them to use the mind against the heart. So you remain miserable and they can exploit you in whatever way they want. That's why the whole world is miserable. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to love. But the mind is such a barrier that neither it allows you to love, neither it allows you to be loved. In both the ways, it comes in the way. And it starts distorting everything. And even if by chance you meet a person you feel love for, and the person feels love for you, your minds are not going to settle. They have been trained by different systems, different religions, different societies. One of my friends married an American girl. He was a professor of physics. And while studying in America, he fell in love with a girl, a beautiful girl, and he married against his parents' wishes. So they became enemies. They did not receive them back in home when they came back to India. I had to give a party in reception for their marriage. But within a month I saw it cannot last. Because one of my friends was staying with me. And he is a very beautiful person, jack of all, master of none, but he knows everything. So he is very interesting and very influential. Superficially, he will impress you on any subject, on anything. You will find later on that it is just superficial, but by that time he has done his work. All that he does is borrow money. He is a PhD. He could have been a professor, but he says, I don't want to bother all this. I enjoy borrowing. I said, you should think that how long this can happen. He said, you don't see, I never borrow from the same person again. And the world is so big and life is so short. I will manage. So he started flirting with the American girl, and she was very much impressed, and he is a very impressive person. And the professor who had married her, he was feeling so jealous. He had just an Indian mind. The Indian mind cannot conceive that his wife is going with somebody to the swimming pool. In the first place, no Indian woman will go to the swimming pool. And even if she goes, she will go with her husband. And she is going with some stranger. She is going with him on the bicycle. They are playing cards. He is in the university, but he is continuously worried about the wife and that fellow, because he is completely free. He does nothing. Soon the marriage broke. They were fighting continuously. I told to them that you love each other, but you don't understand the situation. Your minds are cultivated very differently. She can't see that there is anything wrong, that if she has gone to the swimming pool with some friend. She has been going from her childhood. You cannot conceive the very idea. Your idea is that you have seen in your family, in your society, that even the wife should not open her cover, the sari that is used by the Indian women, is pulled down to make a cover on the face. She should not take the cover off before strangers. You have been brought up with such people. You cannot understand that your wife is holding hand with some stranger and they are enjoying and playing tennis and going for a walk, and you are just sitting and boiling up unnecessarily. You should have thought your parents were right. That this kind of marriage is not going to succeed. And I have not seen any marriage between Indians and foreigners succeeding. They always fail. For the simple reason that the two minds are brought up with different ideas, filled with different programs. It is everybody's birthright to be happy. But unfortunately, the society, the people with whom we have been living, who have brought us into the world, have not thought anything about it. They have just been reproducing human beings like animals. Even worse, because at least animals are not conditioned. This conditioning process should be completely changed. The mind should be trained to be a servant of the heart. Logic should serve love, and then life can become a festival of life.